A 30th district served as the chief deputy commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. He's been a member of the House of Delegates from 2004 to 2012 and currently in the state Senate finishing his first term. And he's been the leading voice in the Senate fighting to prevent gun violence and co-sponsored Delegate Harvey Morgan's decrim legislation in 2010 and has introduced several pieces of cannabis reform legislation this year. He's one of our champions. Please give a warm welcome to Senator Adam Eben.
Thank you. Thank you, Russ, and thanks for having me today. I was listening. First, I wanted to thank you for your work during the session in support of the legislation we had. In particular, I wanted to single out Ed McCann because your efforts were so professional, so on point with the legislation. And Dick can tell you, because he's been doing this for years, that we had more people taking us seriously this year than in the past. It's still a challenge to get people to take us seriously, but we're moving forward. Now, Mark was asked about his district, which I happened to bring a map of with mine. I did want to mention, though, when Mark was introduced, I was thinking about that we do have a lot in common. Besides the fact that every precinct in Mark's district is also in my district, we both won 5 close-way Democratic primaries. We're both Jewish. We're both from Alexandria. We're both gay, and we're both endorsed by Normal. We have one thing not in common. I don't know if the press is here, but I'm not going to. I abide by the law now, and that's all I'm going to say. our Senate districts, as you see mine, they all have a population of about 200,000. The House districts are 80,000 residents. I represent on the river from National Airport to Crystal City to Old Town Alexandria, all the way down to the Mount Vernon Estate and Fort Belvoir, and 200,000 people west of there. Since there's gerrymandering, I'm not going to give you all the intricacies. 65% of the people in my district voted for Obama in 2012, which gives you a sense that that it's pretty easy for me to be an advocate, and I'm happy to do so. But there are colleagues that we need to, of course, work further on. Now, the more on point that we can be, the more armed with facts we can be, the more effective we'll be. First off, Virginia law, you're probably pretty familiar with. I included a graphic from the Normal website on the right, which has a guide to the penalties and laws. But just to put it in context, as I hope you all know, if you're convicted of marijuana possession, you get a criminal record, of course, your driver's license is suspended, up to a $500 fine, and technically you could have up to 30 days in jail. I'm told the reality, though, is that most people get what's called a 251 deferred disposition, which means that without entering a finding of guilt, you still have a criminal record, your driver's license still suspended, you do community service, have to pay court costs, and have drug and alcohol testing. And if that were to happen twice or more, then you're up to the highest misdemeanor we have, which can actually result in jail time. Now, when you're speaking to your legislators about legislation, you really want to know what the bills do. Be very careful not to say that they do more than they do or that they do other things. Just try and be on point. If you don't know, just give them the general topic and tell them you like it. But it's important to know that what we had last year, the bill I introduced, the first one, was for decriminalization. It was not for full legalization, and it was not for medical marijuana. Even though I support those things, that's all that bill did. It would have provided for a $100 fine, like a ticket, no arrests or criminal records. I thought that would be a huge step forward and a good place to get the discussion going in Virginia. Now, the other thing that I'm particularly troubled by and I'm going to continue to work on as well this year is the driver's license suspension. I don't know how many people know, but as part of the war on drugs under the Bush administration, actually, it was decided that you would lose, each state would lose a portion of their federal highway trust fund dollars if they didn't take away the driver's license of all all drug offenders. And what I'm trying to do is work with the U.S. Department of Transportation and ascertain that either we can not take them away because they haven't had a conviction if they're under deferred disposition, or better yet, just do legislation to get this waiver that the federal government allows for now, and 26 states have taken. So if you're convicted of a marijuana offense or otherwise in 26 states, you don't automatically lose your license. In Virginia, you do. You can have a suspended license, but that's a restricted license, but that's a whole other story. So be aware that the legislation for this year may differ. Ed and I are still talking about the fine points of it, working out, so it may differ a bit from last year. So now that you know what the law is and what the bills are, how are we going to get these things passed? How are we going to lobby for them as citizens? Well, first off, there's a lot of homework that you can do on your own. I've put a picture of the General Assembly website and the address up there, and I've circled at top a feature that's called Who's My Legislator? You want to know who your own senator and delegate is, because I just get an email from someone with an urgent crisis who didn't sign their address, and they may well have sent it to 139 other legislators. I'll look and see if it was BCC'd. I want to help them. I'm going to read the email, but most people don't. And during the legislative session, we get thousands of emails, lots of letters. Mark, you're going to get thousands. I'm not exaggerating, thousands. So we don't have time to answer everything that's not from our district. So the first thing we do is we delete people who are not our constituents. But I'm skipping ahead because there's more homework. There's a really good legislative information system in Virginia. It's also on the internet. And it allows you to track bills, see who's on which committees, because for our purposes, you're most interested in who is on the Courts of Justice Committee in the Senate, if that's the only place the bill originates, or the House as well. Still good people to lobby on normal lobby day, because we need to educate them as for what may not pass this year, but may end up being a longer range process. Then at the bottom, I reference and put an arrow to lobbyist in a box. This is a really cool feature. You can track, as a citizen, five bills at once. Now, what that means is you'll find out what the bills are, you'll enter them, and then you're going to get an email notification of each time that bill has had an occurrence or movement or something. If the bill has been assigned to committee, you get a notice. If the bill has been called for a subcommittee hearing or a committee hearing, you'll get a notice. If it's going awaiting a floor vote, you'll know. So, and they happen on short notice. We move pretty rapidly. We only have 60 days this year and 45 days this coming year, and 45 days in the odd year to consider 3,000 bills. So we're at a pretty quick pace. Now, obviously, when you're more professional and courteous to my colleagues, they're going to be more better listeners, we hope. They're not all great listeners, but to get elected, generally you have to listen and be nice to people. So you want to contact your legislators. As I said, we get lots of emails. So the first thing you want to do is state that you're their constituent, and at the bottom of the letter, even put your street address, regardless of whether or not it's email. Then if you have a bill number, state the bill number, because, again, there are 3,000 pieces of legislation. And then one of the most important things, no matter how you contact your legislator, is to establish commonalities. I've had people come to my office over the last 12 years and say, I went to high school with your sister. I'm from your hometown. We went to college together, but I was a different year. And of course, it makes you want to know them better or listen to them more. And if you're a Republican and you have a Republican legislator, please mention that to the legislator. If you ever worked on their campaign or met them at a community forum or know their whatever it is, tell them. But then the most important thing that we're going to ask for in any communication, unless it's a general meeting where you don't have a bill or something, is you want to give them a specific ask. And I've found that in my years there, when you request a response by saying, please tell me how you will vote on this bill, is much stronger than please support this bill. Because I don't usually tell people how I'm going to vote, even if I agree with them. Bills change. They don't do it the way you want it to. They have amendments. However, when someone says to me, how are you going to vote on this? I really think about it because I try and answer the letter. And also, if it's a bill that I haven't thought about, we'll do more research. It's just human nature. You're asked a direct question. You'd like to know what the answer is. Then use your relevant facts. Normal has an excellent lobby sheet that I assume you'll be using something similar this year. It was a four-pager that really laid out the case about marijuana in America, well, in Virginia particularly. It might have been a little long, but it was good. And, you know, fact sheets that you get from lobby groups are helpful. But our legislators are not as educated on marijuana issues, so maybe three or four pages is what they need. But short and to the point using those facts. Then respect their time. During the legislative session, if you're meeting during the session, we may have, in the House, you may have a subcommittee meeting at 7:30 in the morning. Thankfully, mine will be a little bit later. But we may be having subcommittee meetings, full committee meetings, caucus meetings, floor sessions, other business meetings, legislative service on your own bills. So we are busy people during those 45 to 60 days. That said, for most of us, our top priorities are constituents. So if you make an appointment and call ahead, we're going to try and make a point to be there. And I always say to my aide, you know, if I come back in the office and they say, oh, you just missed so-and-so from the Arlington Commission on Aging, I'm like, oh, my God, why do you make them wait? I wanted to see them. Because legislators want to see their constituents. So that's helpful to do the appointment. Then, if you should testify in Richmond, the first thing you would want to do, and I should have brought up this, I'll talk about this, let me go back. So you're meeting with your legislators, and how can you do that? One of the ways you can do that is by going to candidate forums now. We're in the last 2.5 weeks before the election. There may not be many forums. If you live in a district where there is a campaign forum and you go, and if they take questions from the audience or on index cards, and you say, what is your position on reform of marijuana or decriminalization or whatever it is, medical, you're putting them on the spot in public. And if they don't have an answer, they're going to think, I want to be better prepared for the next one. Maybe I need to know some facts. Half the time, they'll give the wrong answer, or 3/4 of the time, from wrong information. And then your job after the forum is to say, oh, it was so great that you answered, but you might need more information that I'll get you. Then one of the most effective things you can do is arrange for a one-on-one or several on-one constituent meeting. Again, this is just with your own legislator. Unless you have like 10 people from adjoining districts and you want to bring them together, which is more complicated. But if I get a request from one person, I try to meet with them if I can work it in during my office hours. If not, my aide meets with them. If we get a request that 5 of my constituents want to meet with me, I'll rearrange my calendar to try and accommodate them. Then, before you get to Richmond this year, we hold public hearings. Most places in the state hold them. Mark and I will have one in Alexandria City Hall with our delegation. There'll be another in Arlington County Government Center with the Arlington delegation that we both belong to. Then there'll be a hellacious one in Fairfax where 25 legislators are the Sunday before the session or Saturday before the session. And at those public hearings, we don't talk. You talk. We listen, and typically the public has up to 3 minutes to speak, and you know, as many people as come can speak. I would not encourage you to have 10 people to speak for 3 minutes each saying the same thing on the same bill, but it's okay to have more than one person talk about different perspectives or even talk for a shorter time period to say, I support what, you know, what she just said or what he just said, and I want to add X or Y. Then there are town hall meetings. This is during the legislative session in the winter. Not everyone has them, but it's real common. I know in my district, Mark and I do one in Old Town. I have one in Mount Vernon, District of Fairfax, one in the Lee District of Fairfax, one in Arlington. And those are usually on Saturdays, sometimes Sunday afternoon, but really Saturdays. And if you want to know about these occurrences, go to your legislators' personal websites or political sites. The state doesn't really give us much of an official anything. And sign up for updates. They'll send you things about their town meetings and that sort of thing, along with endless requests for small dollar campaign contributions. Then, okay, you get to Richmond. And then it's similar to those meetings, as I said, with the issue of the appointment, trying to get an appointment. If you don't meet with your legislator, meet with your legislative aide and ask them, will you share this information with the legislator? And I'm here if it's specific, because if we're there and we still have these bills, we can say, I'm here about X and Y. And normal is great. On your lobby day, do you all coordinate a meet in some central place or something? So they'll brief you on what to do, and they do a good job at it. So then you're, perhaps some of you are testifying before a committee. And I would say that when you testify, coordinating with normal again is a good thing. But really important to me is to always coordinate with the sponsor. I've had bills where I've had two or three perfect witnesses lined up. They were on point. We divided out the information as to who would say what. And then the committee chairs get impatient. They cut people off if it's taking too long. And then they say, is there anyone else who wants to speak? And then 20 people stand up. And that can be too much, particularly if people are not all on message. But there are ways to work on it if the legislator knows, by having everyone state their name, state their organization, their geography, whatever, and show their support nonetheless. Then we always are looking for witnesses. To me, ideal witnesses are people who are unexpected. They might not be from urban centers. They might not be from Northern Virginia. They might not be wearing a tie-dye T-shirt. They might be, perhaps they have maybe they're a veteran. Maybe they're an attorney. The most frustrating thing to me was last year on Bankers Day, one of the bankers comes in my office. I said, oh, you have a banking issue? He says, no, I want to thank you for the marijuana reform stuff. And I said, well, great. Would you testify? He said, oh, no. Don't tell him I was here. So if there are any bankers in the audience or any, you know, whatever it may be, it's helpful. Then, of course, when people testify, legislators need to hear the facts and all that, and that's the sponsor's job primarily. But personal experience is what makes a witness compelling. We had a gentleman who wasn't able to end up testifying, but he would have been the ideal witness, just because it was they would have listened and heard the unexpected. They would have heard that he went to Liberty University grad and undergrad. They would have heard that he goes to the late Jerry Falwell's church every Sunday. They would have heard that he was a minor league baseball player. They would have heard that his business relied on turning around failing businesses in Virginia and North Carolina, that without a known itinerary each week to easily apply for a restricted driver's license. And they would have heard that he's a family man. So all those things would be compelling. So personal experiences, everyone's got different personal experiences. It may be that someone was arrested and what that was like. It may be difficulty finding a job because of criminal record. So let me know, or let your normal representatives know, if that's something of interest. I would say, though, keeping testimony short is helpful. Unlike Congress, where everyone sits down at a table and talks for minutes and hours, we rush through those bills, and the chairman may say, okay, can you finish it up in 30 seconds? Can you take 2 minutes? And that sort of thing, because they want to hear each bill. Then, I should say, yeah, and they have lengthy dockets, particularly the Courts of Justice Committee. And the last thing I'll mention on that is the cannabinoid oil bill that passed last session. Is everyone familiar with that? Okay. That bill, adequate or inadequate as it may have been, what was really compelling to some of the legislators is that there were kids, and one of the kids actually had a seizure during the hearing. And, you know, we're not planning or hoping for anything like that. But for the legislators to see firsthand and feel firsthand how legislation changes someone's life makes the difference. So, and then I would just say that this is a multi-year effort. And with your help, persistence will pay off. Thank you for having us.